Welcome to hour number two on a Monday with hashtag Daily K's host, Peter Bint. Tired of just scratching the surface of Korea? Want to get deep in the weeds?
We are going to pack everything about Korea through its history, its culture, its people, its religions on
Now and Then with David. We are here on a Monday. It is a public holiday, but we have the Sunglass David Tizard in the studio. Stacey's saying, your hair's looking good. You should be the eighth member of BTS.
Is that because BTS broke up? join a defunct K-pop group, David.
Yes, you will take up the slack, perhaps, for everyone who's in the military.
If I do that, I might get to meet Jenny. I've heard some rumours about what's going on at the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, wow. We got some behind the scenes. We cannot confirm or deny any of those rumours. Yeah, I've seen so many pictures.
Heartbroken, though.
From so many celebrities who are in Cannes from Korea.
Yeah.
Actually, lots of, like, not acting in any of the movie celebrities. I don't know how so many have managed to get tickets there, like a few like variety show hosts and stuff. It seems like Korea is so hot, there are many invites for them.
Korea is hot, and it's probably a little bit of confirmation bias. There's probably people from France and Argentina and Peru and Indonesia, but you just don't see them on your social media.
There you go. Yeah, it probably is my social media feeding to me what I want to see. Have you had a good weekend, David? It's been a long one. Well, it is a long one. We're in the throes of a three-day one for many here.
That's why I'm wearing sunglasses. If the truth be known, we've got people like Denny's flashing his pecs at us out there.
Look at his hair.
I know.
He looks like one of the WWF. Oh, I can't remember what.
He needs some oil on him. Denny would look good in oil.
He needs to be topless.
Go on Insta, you'll see him. I've had a long weekend and that's the sunglasses, but it's been beautiful. There's not much traffic on the road. The city's empty and it's a wonderful time of year.
It's been raining a lot. I don't know if it usually rains this much in May, because it's not the rainy season. It's not Changma Cholya. It reminded me of British weather the past couple of days, getting soaked on my way to and from the car.
Yeah.
Our topic for today, I told our listeners, you know, it's the day off in lieu of Buddha's birthday on Saturday, so we're doing something linked to that. Being Buddhist, I see, is the title.
Well, I think we need to talk about Buddhism. We've talked about it a little bit before, but there's so much that you can't cover Buddhism in sort of 25 minutes we get together.
No.
So I thought we'd explore it a little bit more. Now, it's Buddha's birthday this long weekend, and that's why we have the day off. And Buddha's birthday is celebrated in many other Asian states. But it's celebrated at different times. And Buddha's birthday itself is a rather new thing, and who Buddha is, because it's very interesting, and we'll come to this, but in Buddhism, there's not just one Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
So we're celebrating at the moment the birth of the previous Buddha.
Oh.
He's not the only Buddha.
But
Siddhartha, the guy that sits under the tree and finds enlightenment, that was the last Buddha in a line of avatars that come along and give information to the world.
Oh.
And so we're celebrating that Buddha. So whereas in Islam, in Christianity, in Confucianism, there's a single figure.
Yeah.
The Buddha is a position or a role, like a pope or a Dalai Lama.
Wow, that's really interesting. I never knew that about Buddhism. I must say, maybe growing up in the UK, not coming across too many temples and Buddhism in general there, you know, overwhelmingly a lot of Protestants or Church of England goers. That's really curious.
Here's another thing. So it's Buddha's birthday. And why is it Buddha's birthday? Because Buddhism was in Korea from around 300 AD. It goes from India to China. And the Chinese people start translating it, and then it comes down into Korea. But they didn't have Buddha's birthday back then.
Oh.
Buddha's birthday is a relatively new celebration. And why did it come about? Because in the 19th and 20th centuries, where you got missionaries going around the world, Christian missionaries, and they would take Christmas with them.
Yes.
The Buddhists in all of these places would be going, hang on, everybody's celebrating Christmas.
They're focused in on that.
What about us? So it was in the late 1800s. It was in the late 19th century in Sri Lanka that the Sri Lankan people decided, hang on, these British missionaries, they're having Christmas. Mm. We need to have one for our religion. So they modeled Buddha's birthday on Christmas.
Oh, wow.
It's about 120-odd years old, and even less than that in certain countries like Korea. Uh-huh. But it was specifically modeled on Christmas in order to challenge this culture spreading around the world. They needed to preserve Buddhism, and so they said, we'll have a Buddha's birthday.
Oh, that's so curious. And in Korean, the name of the day, I guess, is slightly different. It's not like Buchonim, which is Buddha, like Tengshin. We say Buchonim Oshinnal. So like the day Buddha came, right? Which is also really curious. And Sunflower Skies with an interesting question. I was wondering why they were celebrating it May, because I thought Buddha was said to be born in April. Well, it is April of the lunar calendar, I believe, right? So the fourth month of lunar. And usually, to be honest, it's at the beginning or mid May. This is a very late one. Mm. And I heard that it's because this is a leap month year for the lunar calendar. Instead of leap days, they have like a leap month or a yundal. And so that's why we're having it towards the end of May rather than towards the beginning. It changes every year.
It does. And a lot of different countries, such as Japan, such as Vietnam, such as North Korea, South Korea, China, they will go on different calendars and they will go on different parts. And so it's a relatively new one. And every country is just putting it in their own little place where it will fit. And sometimes they think about other local, they like to glocalize the holiday and put it. And so what they do in Korea, we're having it now. Let's just show a little photo, because they do different celebrations in different parts of the world.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty picture.
It's a pretty picture, isn't it? We'll show you in a minute. But this is, in Korea, they do lanterns. They do lights. And in other parts of the world, for example, in China, on Buddha's birthday, what they do is they wash statues of... Pete's dancing away here, isn't he?
I'm trying to get the attention of the staff outside who are just too busy on their phones. Get the picture up. Yeah, we do lanterns. We light lanterns.
We do lanterns. But let me just say this, what they do in China. In China on Buddha's birthday, they will let animals that were in the abattoirs about to be killed for meat, they will let animals go on Buddha's
birthday. They pardon them almost.
They pardon them, like they do the turkeys in Thanksgiving or something. Yeah. And in recent years, they've had to quell that because they were releasing these like invasive species into the wildlife and it was just destroying the ecosystem.
Oh dear.
In Korea,
I've
it's
not
festivals.
Seen this, though, where they put it up into the sky.
You recognize the tower, though. That's Korea, right?
Yeah, that's Seoul Tower, right? Yeah. I've seen it done where you release the lanterns into, like, Cheonggyecheon Stream or somewhere like that, and then you'll let them float down there. That's beautiful as well. And I'm pretty certain that was not this year, this photo, because it was raining ever so much on Saturday, wasn't it? Because I went and drove past the temple on the weekend and went to my cousin's house, which had a, like, bird's eye view of the temple.
Where is it?
It was in Cheonmasan Mountain in Namyeongju. Right, like a big famous one in Seoul. Yeah. But still, any temples you go to at this time of the year, they've got all the colourful lanterns, like as a kind of canopy ceiling. It was a real shame that it rained because everyone was stuck inside the temples instead. But they were still having their festivities.
There's going to be some lovely stop motion captures of rain coming down on the lanterns soon. But that's what they do in Korea. It's all about the lanterns and it's all about the lights. Now, for 500 years, Buddhist people were not allowed in the city of Seoul.
Oh.
For 500 years.
What?
So Buddhism was the main religion of Korea during the Silla dynasty and during the Goryeo. So from around 600 to 1392, right? So what are we looking at there? We're looking at
600, 700
years. Yeah, 800. Buddhism was the main religion. And then in 1392, when the Joseon dynasty comes, which is all the big Confucianism, Sejongdaewan, King Sejong the Great.
Yeah.
They move the capital city to Seoul, which at the time was called Hanyang, and they tell the Buddhist monks, take off your robes and get a job. You're not allowed in the city of Seoul in your Buddhist robes.
Oh,
and so Buddhism was outlawed from Seoul for about 500 years. And this is really interesting because, you know, sometimes we show old pictures of Seoul and you'll see all the yangban walking around in their hanboks, the white clothes and the gat. Did you ever see any monks in those photos?
No, never, right?
You didn't, did you?
Yeah.
Because they were banned from Seoul. And that's why all the temples, we'll come to this later, all the temples in Korea, they're hidden in the valleys.
Yeah, because the mountains, right, as well.
They're all sort of tucked away in the mountains, in the valleys, because for 500 years, Buddhists could not come into Seoul and they could not celebrate their birthday. And that only sort of changed in 1910. It's a bit sensitive, but when the Japanese colonized Korea, they said, what? You've outlawed Buddhism? That's ridiculous. And they allowed it to come back again.
Wow.
And monks came out from the temples in the countryside and they came back into the city.
That's so interesting, isn't it?
Welcome to Arirang Radio.
If you are in Jeju,
88.7 in Jeju City,
88.1 in Seogwipo City,
101.9 in the Daejeon area.
We're back for part two of Now and Then with David Tizard in the studio on this day off in Korea for many, for most, a day in lieu for Buddha's birthday, which fell on Saturday. We got lots of messages to read out as well. Sunflower Sky is saying, if you ever get a chance to visit the temples, I believe you should do so. They are beautiful. I was able to visit three. I'm thinking when you're in Korea, but be prepared to walk a lot. Yeah, a lot of the time, like maybe the path into the temple can be quite winding, maybe up a mountain. And like you said, a lot of the time they are kind of randomly hidden here, there, even in mountains in Seoul as well.
Let's, I love that name, Sunflower Skies. Let's talk about temples once we've done these messages. Yes. Let's talk about those for Sunflower.
Okay, that sounds like a good idea. Hartley also loving your eloquent words, David, saying, round my way, we say, get in where you fit in. So finding your location in life, getting where you fit. And I like that as well.
We say, bottle of water. Emotional damage. Teto says that one of the biggest temples in Asia is, I might pronounce this incorrectly, so do forgive me, Borobudur. And Thai people walk in, they go there to celebrate on those days. Perhaps one of the biggest in the world. Now, listeners, I want to ask you a question about temples and cities. Now, in most Asian cities, the big temples are located downtown.
Sure.
They're located next to the presidential palaces. They're big and they're glitzy and they've been there for a long time.
Yeah.
In South Korea, most of the temples are outside of the city.
Yeah, in the mountains.
They're in the mountains places. And they're hidden. And this is the idea because they were banned from Seoul. And so you have Jogesa, but this is a recent temple. It's there and it's not this big, huge thing. So wherever you might be in the world, do you have temples downtown? Because it's not something that happens in Korea. And this might be one of the few countries in the world like that. What do the listeners think?
Yeah, because for the longest time, you know, it was the main religion, like you said, pre-Joseon dynasty.
Yeah.
And so you might assume that if you didn't know about that history of like 500 years of it being banned in the city outright. I thought before I found that out that it was because of like the energy from the mountains, like the feng shui and things like that.
The sanshin, the mountain spirits.
Yeah, but I don't know if they are linked. I'm guessing in Buddhism, maybe there's something to do with energy and things like this as well.
Do you know that Tangun Halaboji, the first ever Korean, grandfather Tangun, he ruled Korea in mythology. Mm-hmm. He ruled Korea for 1300 years. And then when Gija from China came to Korea, Tangun escaped into the mountains and became a mountain spirit.
Uh-huh.
So after 30, that's why there's spirits in the mountains, Pete. That's where Tangun Halaboji is.
That's the origin of the
Sanshin. And sometimes you'll see the photo of like, it looks like Tangun. He's got a tiger next to him and the big mountains behind him.
Yeah.
Have you seen those photos?
Yeah.
That's Sanshin. That's the mountain.
Because he's fled to the mountains.
He becomes the mountain spirit.
Oh, interesting stuff. Yeah. So we're talking about Buddhism in Korea, and David is going to take us on the deepest of dives.
Shall we talk about the temples? Because I wanted to do that. We'll jump forward a little bit, but we'll come back. Now, the temples in Korea, and a lot of this will come from a gentleman scholar, a friend of mine called David Mason. You can check out his work.
He's been on Arirang Radio a good few times.
He knows a lot and he tells a good stories. Now, he will say this about temples, that in China, you can see a temple from 5 kilometers away.
Uh-huh.
It will be red. There will be fire engine red. There will be dragons on the roof. There will be silver phoenixes.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be placed on top of the mountain.
Okay.
On top, on the apex.
The cherry on top.
The cherry on the top, like the angel on the Christmas tree. In Korea, they don't build temples on top of the mountains.
Uh-huh.
In Korea, this one's lit up a little bit, but you notice it's nestled in there.
Exactly.
And when that's not lit up, you can be 50 meters away from a Korean temple and you won't see it.
Absolutely.
Because it blends into nature, and they're trying to, it's that illegality. Mm-hmm. They're trying to hide it, but also with nature, with that Taoist natural influence, they're not trying to erect it on top of the mountains. They're trying to build it sort of into the mountains, becoming part of the mountains.
Wow, yeah. And so there's like temples in the city, I think maybe even from older times, that are hidden in the mountains that maybe weren't within the old city walls, yeah. Like just across the road at Umyeonsan Mountain. There's one that you will completely miss, yeah. Even in this day and age. I don't know why, but they don't have a massive sign for it. So if you walk past the entrance to the street or alleyway leading up to it, you will have no idea. It's literally like 100 meters back from the main road. And you can't see it because it's nestled among all these big trees. But if you go there, it is beautiful once you get into that like courtyard area. Amazing.
And that's a big difference from other Asian cities, where they're this big sort of fire engine red, cherry red and standing out. Let me say one thing else about the temples. When I first started going to temples in Korea, I was, confession time, a little bit disappointed because I was used to walking into places like Notre Dame, St. Paul's Cathedral, the Basilica, Westminster Abbey, and you would be dumbfounded by the regal, the awe of it, the architecture, the scale, and the construction and the centuries old manufacturing, and you would look at it and it would be divine almost. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
And you go to a Korean temple and you're like, but that's the idea. They're very humble. They're very sparse. There's lots of sand and there's lots of wind. They don't have all this decoration. So it took me a long time to understand the nature and the humility. That comes from Buddhist and Taoist influences.
Yeah.
Rather than this sort of big peak of Christian build up to the skies, they're like, no, you've got to stay in nature, man.
It's completely the opposite, isn't it, if you think about it like that?
Yes.
And yeah, when I was younger and I'd go into cathedrals and impressive religious buildings in Europe, I would think, wow, yeah, there is something divine about this, right? Mm. And that's what it's designed to do, though, isn't it? It's designed to kind of make you feel like this is not of this world almost, right? It's so grand. But then, yeah, once I've got more and more used to the temples here and the nature is beautiful, and some of them have some beautiful like grottos and whatnot.
Yeah, that's very true.
And like one place I went to out on, I think, Taebudo Island or one of the islands on the west coast had like 100 little Buddha statues all in these rows, almost like stadium seating of Buddha statues. And that was impressive as well. You get to see, both sides have their appeal, right?
I'll tell you about why sometimes you see three Buddhist statues. Mm-hmm. You sometimes see three of them, don't you? You go to the thing, we'll have a photo for you later. You just talked about this kind of otherworldly and God thing. Let's just take a step back and talk about who Buddha was. Now, Sakyamuni, the prince in northeast India, in Nepal, this Buddha, he was giving a lecture one day and somebody came up to him and said, are you a god? Your eyes are shining. You look like a Hindu god. You look like something majestic. Are you a god?
Yeah.
And Sakyamuni, Siddhartha, said, no, I'm not a god. And then the person said, well, are you a human? Are you one of us? And he said, no, I'm not one of you either.
Oh.
And he said, then what are you?
Yeah.
And Sakyamuni, Siddhartha said, I am Buddha. Oh. I am the awakened one. Uh-huh. I am the one whose eyes are open. And now here's the thing about this Buddhism. This Buddhism that they talk about is incomplete because this was the previous Buddha. There's still another Buddha to come.
Oh, okay. We're still waiting like many religions.
So this Siddhartha, this guy from Nepal, who we celebrate his Buddha's birthday, his teachings, get this, were incomplete.
Oh.
You don't say that about Christianity.
No.
You don't say that about Islam. You don't say that about Confucianism. What they say about Buddhism is that he came along, there was a Buddha before him, the Buddha of medicine, and Siddhartha, Sakyamuni, he was the Buddha of psychology. So he gave people these tools to free their mind and things. But Pete, we still have war. We still have violence.
Of course.
We still have death. And so the Buddha did all right, but we still need millions to be liberated. And so we're waiting for the next Buddha.
Wow. So in Buddhism, that's kind of a good explanation for why things aren't perhaps perfect. Because I think a lot of non-religious people have trouble with that, right? With Christianity or Islam or whatever. They're like, well, then why do kids get sick? You know, and why do kids die?
Absolutely.
Things like this. But if you've put that open saying we're not complete yet,
yeah,
that kind of solves all those problems.
And so everybody's waiting for the next Buddha. Maybe we'll talk about that in a minute, but they're waiting for the next Buddha.
Oh, interesting stuff.
Now.
All About Korea. Korea.
Arirang Radio.
We're back for part three of Now and Then with David in the studio doing a deep dive on Buddhism, which still, I believe, I did a show the other day and we were talking about Buddha's birthday as a theme, and they were saying between like Catholicism, Protestants and Buddhism, if you're religious, it's about a third of people like believe each thing. It's quite level, neck and neck.
There's a performative. I would say that Buddhism, according to data, you find Buddhism being about 20% of the population.
Oh, the whole population. Okay.
But only about 10% of them, maybe less, go to temples regularly and perform and do things like that. The rest are like armchair Buddhists.
I did see on Saturday, there's also a Buddhist TV station just down the road from us. They must have been holding an event, like a broadcast for kids. There are loads of families dressed up, you know, in what we in Britain might think is church wear, you know, like a dress and stuff like this, coming out. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. You know, I don't know what I expected Buddhists to wear, like robes or something like that. But of course not.
A loincloth.
Yes. Inyin has got people in loincloths here saying, in Malaysia and other countries in Southeast Asia, we celebrate Vesak, a day to commemorate the birth, enlightenment and passing of Gautama Buddha. This year, it's May 4th in Malaysia, and Buddhists give alms, donating robes to monks. Oh, interesting.
Fabulous. And you see the global influence of this religion and just the people talking about it. By the way, Nian is asking about the future Buddha. I'll come to that in a minute. The Koreans call it Mirok. Future Buddha, we'll come to that. Teto is saying you can find Hindu and countless Buddha temples. It's the first religion to arrive in Indonesia. Mostly they're located far from the city. I guess cities move. And Raul says most of the temples and churches are built in the center of the city, blending with the nature and connected. And he really likes that thought.
Yeah, very different. Just saying, even in Japan, the temples have the gates that are bright red as well and easy to see. I'm not sure about how many Buddhists there are or Buddhist influence in Japan, because isn't that the country that has a lot of like little gods and stuff like that from before, because it's an island nation?
Little gods.
I don't know, like Jeju also has like thousands of gods and stuff. Being an island often has you believing different things from maybe the mainland. I'm not sure.
Well, Buddhism divides into Mahayana and Theravada. Uh-huh. And so Korea has, with China, Mahayana Buddhism, which means it's not about sitting in the mountains by yourself, but it's about this community. You're meant to help other people receive enlightenment. You know this kind of Kung Fu Panda thing where you go off into the woods and you find your inner penguin and do it by yourself? That's not Korean Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
Here you do it all together. Now, there's two types of Buddhism here. There's the Scholastic Buddhism. This is where all the monks, they sit and they study.
Oh.
And it was like getting a PhD. You know, you would have to study some of the sutras that Sakyamuni, that Siddhartha gave in his lectures. And you would study one for about 20 years.
Wow.
And once you did that, then the other monks would say to you, now you're enlightened.
Okay.
Now you can go and teach other people. And there would be all these gold statues and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the Scholastic Buddhism. And then you get it in China, in about 500 AD, you get this guy called Bodhidharma.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you don't need gold statues. You don't need books. All you need is to meditate.
Uh-huh.
You need to sit down and cross your legs, and enlightenment is something that you do and you practice.
Not study.
Not study. Okay. And so there's these two things, and that was the way it was in Korea. There was this big fight between Scholastic Buddhism and Zen Buddhism, the meditative one.
There was a conflict
And
there.
It was this next gentleman. We'll try to show you one of the representations of him. His name is Bhoja Jinalguksa.
Uh-huh.
He was a Korean monk of the Goryeo period. And he was the person who started Joge. You know the Jogesa temple downtown?
Yeah, which is like the representative order, right?
It's the number one order. And that's a combination of Scholastic. He was the one that combined Scholastic and Zen together.
Oh, put them together.
He made this kind of new Joge Buddhism, which is Korean Buddhism. And it's the number one Buddhism in Korea.
And that's kind of a balance between the two?
It's trying to get unity between them. It's trying to like combine Catholicism and Protestantism,
wow,
Sunni and Shiite, bring them together.
Interesting.
He did that.
That's amazing. Way back in the Goryeo period.
Yeah, predating
like the 1300s or the 1400s. Interesting stuff. And then where do we go?
Let's talk about these three statues, because I said I'd tell you about these. This is picture number five, PD Nim, if we can go there. When you go to most temples, you're going to see a picture like that. You've seen things like that, Pete?
Yeah, when you go into the building itself, which, you know, you don't have to. You can just appreciate it from outside. You'll see these really shiny golds. Statues, three Buddhas sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
I don't know the difference. I mean, is there a difference
there is
between
a difference.
The three? Okay.
There is a difference.
Because they look quite similar.
Sometimes the middle one is the Buddha and the one on the left and right are his like bodhisattvas or assistants. But generally, and this is at Jogesa, the big one, you'll find that it's the Buddha of the past, the Buddha of the present, and the Buddha of the future.
Wow.
And often you'll see the Buddhas and they'll have one, they'll have perhaps their right hand up like this and their left hand out like this, right? You might see them for those on the video feed. The right hand up is offering protection, providing protection, and the left hand out is giving. So protecting and giving.
That's the symbolism.
That's the symbol.
I always wondered what those hands meant.
Of the three. But it's... There's a development for it. So, you know, the Buddha of the past is meant to bring the medicine and the healing. The Buddha of the present is meant to bring the psychological. And the Buddha of the future, when that Buddha comes, it solves the remaining problems of the world.
Ah, so we're waiting for that. Like in Christianity, waiting for the return of Christ or whatever. But in this case... we're saying that the teachings are incomplete in Buddhism.
Yeah, and there's going to be a time when sort of Buddhism goes. Now, the future Buddha is called Miruk.
Okay.
And now Miruk, we'll show you a picture of Miruk. That's what they call him in Korea. Maitreya in other Buddhist or in Sanskrit. But the future Buddha is normally seen as standing.
Uh-huh.
And you can see that pagoda hat on his thing. That's the future Buddha standing. Now, lots of people put future Buddha statues up around the country.
Yeah.
Especially on the West Coast, because they want to be the place where future Buddha comes.
Oh, like to attract him in there.
You know when you like play battleships or something and you're trying to hit all the places and the thing? They're putting the statues up because they want to be, and that's future Buddha.
Standing.
A standing Buddha, yeah.
Because, yeah, all the other statues you usually see, they're sitting in that kind of meditative pose, right?
Yeah.
But with Miruk standing up there, and that hat was pretty fancy as well.
It is. Check this next picture, Pete. Do you know what this is?
The building looks, you know, not like a common one that you'd see in Korea. Almost looks like a university.
Maybe a university.
Yonsei or something like that.
Yonsei is not very Buddhist. The students at Yonsei still have to do mandatory chapel.
Ah.
Angelina Jolie's child is there, and they have to do chapel to pass, to graduate from Yonsei.
Uh-huh.
This is Dongguk University. Okay. Dongguk is the country's biggest Buddhist university. It's run by the Joge, the big Buddhist order that was combined. By them, and I know some people that teach there and work there. It's got a lovely campus. You don't have to be Buddhist to attend there, just like all the people at Yonsei and not all Christian.
Sure.
It's got a great engineering and architecture department.
That's right in the heart of Seoul near the Changchun Gymnasium, right? The big S Hotel.
Yeah.
You don't drive past this bit. I'm guessing this is in the grounds, but it looks beautiful, like on the side of a like mountain or big hill.
Mm.
I wonder if it's placed there for that reason as well. But I did hear that because this is a Buddhist university traditionally, that's why you won't find too many like Ponaga or the big glitzy nightlife surrounding that, like you might find in Hongdae, for instance, Hongdae University and things like that, maybe due to it. But I'm sure many of the students, you know, they let their hair down like any other students.
I work at Seoul Women's University, which is just by the Officers Academy.
Uh-huh.
There's no nightlife around it for those reasons, to keep the boys and girls out of trouble.
That's interesting.
Now, there's this thing about Buddhism that it was illegal for so long, 500 years, and now... the Buddhists who suffered for so long, these monks, and when they were out in the countryside, they would have been fending off tigers, fending off bears, doing their best to stay alive and carry on the teachings year after year, which they did.
Yeah.
Now, the hashtag today, Pete, was...
location, which...
They have the best locations in the country.
They
live in the national parks. They have the national parks, man. What you wouldn't give to buy some of these locations that the temples are in, because now they also have internet and 5G and convenience stores. You're not sort of isolated from civilization anymore.
Uh-huh.
But these monks and these temples who suffered for so long, now time has come back round and they have the best location in the country.
They're laughing. In a lot of cases, you know, they do temple stays. They attract a lot of tourists who aren't even religious. There's the one that is kind of the anomaly for me, but I'm guessing in the past it wasn't as exposed. The one near Samsung Station, you know, near the Coex Pomunsa, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. It's that big one which isn't too far up a mountain. It's quite exposed. Yeah. It's beautiful. And when they have these celebrations for Buddha's birthday, it is packed. Yeah. Packed full of people and so lovely to visit. Yeah.
Whatever religion you may or you may not be, at the moment in Korea, this is the time of Buddhism. We hope we can all respect each other. And whether the future person is a future Buddha, a future Christ, a future saint, or maybe just it's going to be Pete. Who knows? But let's hope for a brighter future together.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that deep dive, David. We'll see you again next week.
See you next week.
You can listen to Monday's segment Now and Then with David Tizard every Monday from 10 a.m. KST on hashtag Daily K.